Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news,
Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio Network, and in the first hour, it's the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by, and the good news segment of the week.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. There are now 95 confirmed deaths in the South Florida condo collapse.
Through the ongoing search and recovery efforts, our teams have recovered an additional victim.
Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava said the work of identifying human remains is tough. Surfside's mayor says American Airlines and the United Way are offering to fly out families of the victims at no cost. He also announced they're working to grant site access to expert engineers so they can investigate why the building collapsed. Texas Governor Greg Abbott is warning the Democratic politicians who went to Washington, D.C. to hold up a special session they can be arrested if they return to Texas. Abbott says the Texas House Speaker can issue the arrest order and have members locked up inside the Capitol. The Republican is also threatening to call special session after special session in hopes of getting bills on election security, bail reform, legislative funding, and property tax reform passed. Democrats went to Washington, D.C. yesterday in protest of the election bill, which they say will make it harder for minorities and the disabled to vote. Democrats last fled Texas in 2003 due to a fight over redistricting. White House officials say President Biden will be speaking about voter rights today. The president is traveling to Philadelphia and is expected to call out those who continue to claim the 2020 election was rigged. Biden's visit follows the Pennsylvania governor's veto against legislation introduced by Republican lawmakers that would have reformed the state's election process. Inflation is climbing higher than expected. According to the Labor Department, the Consumer Price Index jumped 5.4% in June from a year ago. That's the largest gain in over a decade. The 2021 Emmy nominations are out. Netflix and other streaming providers are dominating many of the categories this year. The nominees for Outstanding Comedy Series include Ted Lasso, Blackish, Hacks, The Flight Attendant, Cobra Kai, The Kominsky Method, Pen 15, and Emily in Paris. The ceremony will be held September 19th at the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Hey there, it's Kristen Ralfinkbeiner. I am the host of a great show you're going to want to listen to called Breaking Through. It's here on Mondays at 5 a.m. We tackle the top topics facing our nation with experts from across the country that bring news to you in Washington State to talk about how your voice matters, how you can best be heard, and how you can make a difference. We're on right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. at 5 a.m. on Monday. Breaking Through. Be there.
And let's go ahead and take a look now to Alternative Talk weather outlook for Tuesday. Well, we'll see more sunshine ahead of us today. High temperatures around 81, 82 degrees. Tonight, mostly clear skies, lows back down to about 58, 57. For Wednesday, more sunshine yet again. A little cooler, though, around 77. Increasing clouds Wednesday night, nothing too major. Lows down to about 56. Thursday, running up into the weekend, partly the mostly cloudy skies. High temperatures backing off a little bit in the low 70s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned, because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to The Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next to you.
Welcome to The Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Everybody, welcome to our good news segment. You've heard us talk a lot about our technology. You've heard us talk a lot about what we're doing. But I got to tell you, there is one industry that when you talk about technology, even if you can remember back in the day when you had to book your flight, you had to book your hotel, everything was manual. You probably had some piece of paper in front of you. And, you know, to be honest with you, that wasn't very long ago. But the travel industry changed dramatically and for the better. What, though, has technology done, especially with Brianna Frank joining me here today, director of IBM Cloud, what can we look forward to see how technology is changing and how cloud-based services, especially by IBM, are really meeting the needs of so many people? Brianna, it's great to have you. Welcome. welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So there are a lot of industries that technology has hit and changed for the better, but a little bit slower, I believe, than the travel industry. When the travel industry went digital, so much has changed, but yet so many people have tried to keep up. You know, today we're talking about technology that you're going to mention and really give us a little insight to that is making this not just easier for companies, but making it super smart. Tell us about the role that you've seen technology play in travel.
Yeah, that's a great question. I like how you opened, you know, about the history.
Yes.
So easy for us to forget, you know, how people travel to be. And, you know, for years now, we've been kind of leveraging technology to find the best price, to find the perfect, you know, flight, to meet our needs, the perfect hotel room. But now with the pandemic, I think more than ever, we're seeing, you know, a surge of travel. You know, a lot of folks had their, you know, plans delayed or postponed. And now, you know, everyone's ready to get out there and start to travel again, but you know, the airlines are and the travel industry as a whole are having to keep us safe. So there's this a lot of pressure to really use technology and create digital experiences. So where we can have very frictionless, contactless, you know, check-ins, and where we can order drinks and food from our seat in the plane instead of having to wait for a flight attendant to come around. Those are some of the things that we're seeing is really critical right now. One, to keep us safe, but also, you know, because the demands of us as travelers have really changed, and now we're not very patient. So we want to, you know, we want on-demand, instantaneous service.
And I think this is really part of our conversation today is to really say how the gap has been closed between, let's just call it end-user demand and supply demand to provide. And there are so many connecting parts, but I believe that the end-user demand is getting greater and greater and greater across the board. And, you know, there are some things that companies have done to change. Let's talk about what companies see, what the benefits are to what we're talking about, but also the pandemic has really opened up opportunities for companies to adjust and change. What have you found?
Yeah, no, I think the pandemic has definitely offered, you know, a chance to change and pivot. And, you know, consumers are more willing than ever to leverage, you know, kiosks and, you know, remote check-ins, and which is wonderful. And it's actually allowed the consumers to have a faster, you know, more enjoyable experience, but also it's alleviated some of the surge on the airlines and the travel industry as they, you know, are staffing up with agents. So, you know, it's kind of interesting how, you know, things like virtual assistants where, you know, you're using artificial intelligence to kind of predict the kinds of questions a user might have or, you know, to help problem solve, that's actually helped the airlines and the travel industry because, you know, they may not have as many agents at the moment to fill all demand, but it also helps the user because they're able to get an answer faster. And if they do have to talk to an agent, they can get to one faster. So we're seeing, you know, benefits on both sides, especially with AI in the terms of, you know, really kind of predicting a problem before it happens. So maybe you see a surge of usage or, you know, individuals flying to a specific city. You know, the travel industry can prepare for that and have, you know, additional, you know, rental cars on hand as an example. By using artificial intelligence, they're able to get ahead of some of these problems.
Yeah, and I love that. What I like to think about, especially in the industry that I'm in and really building this network is, you know, we calling it the, you know, connecting the dots, you know, for a higher level of service. And that's what I think we're talking about when we're talking about this level of cloud service. Can you let folks know how they can find out about the IBM Cloud?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, to kind of find out more about how the IBM Cloud is transforming the travel industry and other industries, you know, you can go to IBM.com/cloud to get more information.
Okay, well, let's take a look at this because sometimes we get so, how should I say it? We're so used to on-demand, push a button. You know, I was on my phone over the weekend, and I needed to get something, and I'm like, dot, dot, dot. And if I had to go to three screens, that was going to be, like, way too many, right? So let's talk about, you know, when we think about travel, what are some of the critical things that we should know about that airlines are doing to make sure that things are being shifted around so people get the demand they want? For example, I know that the demand is high because for the first time with the airline that I fly, I had to wait 60 minutes to get a call, and then finally you could hit a button and they'll call you back. So let's talk about the role of technology in industries like travel, but also from your perspective, you know, what's the possibility here?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I actually was booking my own family vacation over the weekend. The thing that really struck me is that when I was looking at reviews for hotels and things of that nature, mm-hmm. I found that people tended to give a negative review if they had to wait a long time, so maybe even 20 minutes to check in. I found that was really interesting because after they came home from their trip, they had a wonderful trip, but that was the thing that stuck out in their mind is that they had to wait in line. So I think that there's just a lower tolerance for waiting in line. And, you know, especially now that we're in a pandemic, you know, no one wants to really kind of, you know, be in a big crowd. They want to be able to reduce the face-to-face contact, but also we're just impatient as travelers, so we don't want to have to wait. And so I think there's this expectation that operationally that we have things really under control and that we're handling a lot of that check-in process electronically and digitally. So I think that's the big trend that I'm seeing in terms of just our, you know, tolerance for having to wait is so low. So whether it's you're checking in or, as you mentioned, you know, waiting online for an answer, you know, the pandemic is creating a surge that we're going to have to, there are a lot more people traveling, but hey, we're in.
Yeah. I think we're even more impatient than we were before the pandemic. And, you know, rightly so. I think people are wanting to know that I'm going to be able to shift my life. I'm going to be able to have a great time. I'm going to be able to get out there. You know, let me just ask you this, because I've done a number of interviews with folks from IBM, IBM Cloud, and there's so many areas that y'all are into, and I wanted to talk to you about the future. Without holding you to, yes, this is going to happen, I want your vision of where the future of technology and travel could go.
So, I mean, I think that what my job and IBM's job is to really facilitate innovation. And mm-hmm. so what we have to do is provide a platform. We have to provide the right tools and the right expertise to allow our clients to pivot, to innovate. And so, you know, whatever direction the world sort of demands, whether it's, you know, increasingly frictionless experiences, maybe it's more security. You know, and I think that that's also a big concern as people are taking out their credit cards, they're using their passports again, they want to keep their data safe, they want to keep their information very secure and compliant. So those are the areas that I think that are most critical right now in terms of, you know, technology is really having that built-in security, but also providing the right tools and expertise so that our clients can just move faster and pivot faster. Because really what it's about is kind of listening to your clients and figuring out what is the next feature function that we need to deliver to build that amazing experience. So I think, you know, we have to make sure that we're providing that platform so that our clients can go in whatever direction they need to deliver that amazing experience.
You know, first of all, let me thank you for coming out here and talking about this and really giving us up some information. I know that people that are traveling or waiting to put their plans together, they just really want to know, I don't want to have to connect all the dots. I want some form of intelligence that's going to help me with this. You know, how do people find out more about what we're talking about today? And also, how do they find out more about the direction that IBM and IBM Cloud is going?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, at IBM.com/cloud is a great place to start. You can kind of learn about all the different technologies and services that we provide to allow our clients to move faster so that they can build experiences that, you know, allow the travel industry to move as smoothly as it needs to move to meet all of this new client demand.
Yeah, and that's really the key. I mean, some of the studies and surveys say that people are ready now with the vaccination. They're ready to fly. They're ready to get out there and go places. And, you know,
they're ready to go. And to your point, I think that the anticipation and the expectation
yeah.
is high because many people have had to delay their travel. They want a flawless, you know, amazing trip because they've had to, you know, wait a long time for this trip. So there's a lot of pressure to make sure that we can pull off these amazing experiences.
I couldn't have said it better. There is a lot of pressure, and thank you for stepping up and helping out with this, Brianna. Thank you. Last question. What's your personal message? What do you want to leave us with today?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the most important thing is when you're talking about technology is keeping your data secure. And, you know, IBM Cloud and IBM believes that your data is your data. And so we want to make sure that that's safe and secure. We don't profit off of, you know, our clients' data.
I love it. Brianna, thank you so much. Take care. Everybody, get ready to fly. Get ready to fly. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to our good news segment. I got to tell you, I want to introduce you to somebody you may or may not know, Jackie Aden. Jackie is the author of Hush Money, How One Woman Proved Systemic Racism in Her Workplace and What Kept Her Job. We're going to be talking with Jackie about this book, but it's a much bigger conversation. It's the conversation we started weeks ago. It's the conversation that started with, what do you mean women don't deserve equal pay? And who do you think is at the bottom of that list? And what do you mean we're going to keep this woman of color out of the Olympics? Why? Yeah, all of that and much more. But what don't we know? What don't we know? And how prevalent is it? Hush Money is a compelling and beyond cautionary tale that is familiar, all too familiar to black people across the globe. But here's what happens. Right? Here's what we know. Our black sisters are speaking up now. And they're speaking up, and what they're saying is, hello, we got to stop this. Jackie, it's so great to have you. Welcome to the show. I'm a little fired up because we've been covering this for a long time. And by the way, I've been covering this most of my life because of my family and my background. And I want to tell you this. The timeliness of this, how did you plan this? Welcome.
Well, thank you. I am so glad to be here. And I'll tell you, the timing of it was based on several factors, Dr. Pat. First of all, if you know a little bit about me and my daughters who helped me co-author this book, we ourselves have been victims of racial discrimination. My career, which spanned probably very close to two decades in higher education, was derailed multiple times over that sequence. And so if you can just imagine for a minute what it's like to be someone working in corporate America, you are not only good at what you do, you enjoy it, and you're building this career that you can have the American dream with. This career is going to allow you to own a house. It's going to allow you to buy a car. It's going to allow you to provide for your family and even have money to pay for your bills. And after a few years of working in this career that's going in the right direction, all of a sudden the rug is pulled from under you. And you now find yourself at risk of losing this job for no other reason than because you are black. And someone in the organization decided that you did not deserve to be in that position. And so your career is derailed. You are heartbroken. You are traumatized, but you pick up the pieces and you go and search for another company, hoping that things will be different. You start all over. You build a career. You build a reputation for yourself. You learn what you need to learn, and you're good at it. And now you think you can breathe. And so you feel like you're on the right track. And then once again, someone decides that because you are black, you do not deserve that position, and you become a target, and that rug is pulled from underneath you. So it's not a one-time thing that happens to our black and brown people, Dr. Pat. It happens repeatedly. There is no safe place for us to build careers. And so the mass majority of people are flocking to this book, Hush Money, How One Woman Proved Systemic Racism in Her Workplace and Kept Her Job, because it gives people of color a hope that we have not had before. It gives us a way, knowing that this is something we're going to continue to battle and deal with. But if this one woman was able to not only prove what was happening to her, but actually fight it, survive the battle, win the war, and keep her job, I want to know what she did, because I'm going to do the exact same thing. And that's why this book is just getting such amazing attention worldwide right now.
It's getting attention, and it's written in such a beautiful way that we can follow along. And I have to tell you this, as I was reading this book, Jackie, one of the things I was really struck by is how I felt exactly by your words in the shoes, in the feet on the ground.
Yes.
Yeah, in the twisting arc of Ebony's story. You cannot help put yourself in this place. And I don't care what color you are. If you read this book, you're going to get a taste of something that you're probably not familiar with.
You know, you bring up a very valid point. I'll tell you, Dr. Pat, Hush Money is really appealing to, I'll tell you, three different types of readers right now. For the person of color who has been dealing with racial discrimination or racism, if you look at the reviews on Amazon, the theme is pretty clear. They see this book as a survival guide, a way to fight racism and actually mm-hmm. keep the job and the career that they've built. So this is appealing to those currently dealing with racial discrimination on just a huge level. But, you know, interestingly enough, Dr. Pat, I am being contacted by employers.
Yeah.
And this book is also appealing to employers because I'll tell you what happened. I think the rose-colored glasses were taken off for a lot of organizations who really want to do the right thing, who want to make sure that their employees are getting an equal opportunity and that there is not racism in their organizations, but they're realistic and they know that there are issues because employees keep coming forward saying that they're being discriminated against, you know, saying that they're being treated differently than other employees. And so employers are reaching out to me and they're asking me how they can use Hush Money to improve the environment and to make sure that if there is racism going on, because Dr. Pat, I don't know if you have heard anyone tell you this, but today's racism, modern day racism, is not like it was decades ago.
Not at all.
Not at all. If you look at modern day books, television shows and movies, most of them always focus on racism that occurred decades ago during a time where it was more overt, you know, it was easily spotted. Today's racism in the workplace is more covert. It's hidden and it is much harder to prove. And so employers know that there's a chance that there are some racist behaviors and some racist acts going on in their organizations, but they want to be able to identify it. And that's where I tell them, you know, diversity trainings, as you know, Dr. Pat, with your HR background, diversity trainings have been around for decades, right? And, you know, sometimes they're done annually. Sometimes they're done semi-annually. Sometimes they last an hour, maybe 4 hours, and they're usually mandatory for all staff. And at the end of those trainings, everyone on staff checks the box promising to treat everybody equally, promising not to discriminate, promising not to act or behave in racist ways. And then after they check that box, meeting that annual or semi-annual requirement, they go back to their routines and back to their jobs, and the racism continues. And so what I tell employers when they reach out to me is, diversity trainings themselves are not going to unteach someone who has been taught to behave in racist ways. It's just not going to happen in a once-a-year training. But what you can do to prevent and reduce racism in your workplace is add hush money. How one woman proved systemic racism in her workplace and kept her job into that diversity training, and show your leaders and your managers the unconventional methods. And when I say unconventional, I mean unconventional. Unconventional methods that this woman, Ebony, used to prove the existence of racism, turn the tables on that organization, and keep her job. And if you show this to your managers and your leaders, and you let them know that this book is spreading like wildfire through black and brown communities, and your employees are reading this, and they're adopting these unconventional methods this woman used, if you are exhibiting racist behavior, if you are discriminating against someone on staff, you may very well find yourself the victim of an employee who's read this book and is using these strategies against you, unbeknownst to you, until it's too late and your job is at risk.
Yeah. I mean, what you've done is you brought something to the forefront that organizations can dig their teeth into. And what I mean by that is, I'm part of an old school group of people. They don't do this anymore. They don't do what used to be known as sensitivity training. So I'm part of a group of people that not only experienced sensitivity training back in the 70s, but was changed by it. You know, people like Harvey that stepped in and did a level of sensitivity training that you could not walk away from. And we were forever changed. It was grueling, Jackie. I mean, for a lot of people it was grueling, but you left there after 10 days, 7 to 10 days, right? And you understood what was inside of you that now we're looking at in the way you described as a different version of racism. I want to ask you this question. This book reveals the changing landscape of racism and how smart people have gotten to sidetrack and create a whole new form of passive-aggressive racism. That's my term. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely agree. And it's because of that that in a lot of cases, many of our black and brown people, you know, when they work, and it doesn't matter, Dr. Pat, what job you have. That's the interesting thing.
No.
You could be the lowest job on the totem pole, or you could be the CEO of a company, and you are going to be targeted the same way. If someone determines that because of the color of your skin, you do not deserve that, to be in that position. And so what a lot of people have been doing because of the way that racism has morphed into this more, you know, covert, this more hidden way of attacking people where they hurt. What they do is they actually find themselves facing three impossible choices. And a lot of people usually take one of those choices. They either suffer in silence because they need that job. They've got to keep it. If you are a person of color and you have a great job and you have bills and you have a family and you know that no matter where you go, you're going to face racism. Some people believe it's just better to suffer in silence and stay here because there's no safe place. Does that make sense?
It does make sense to me. And, you know, I am, first of all, I want to congratulate you and your daughters. I just want to congratulate you for taking something that is so in the world. I'm going to say in the world. We'd like to talk about the United States, but let's just be real. It's like in the world. Taking something, presenting it in a story format, but more importantly, giving us insights in every chapter, you know, guiding us through the power of an email, having us look at whether or not hate is in the workplace. She hates me not. And this is a short interview, but I could definitely go on about it. What you're doing to uncover something that by any other term is a form of passive-aggressive racism. And I say that because I know what that term means. But this is the thing that we have to absolutely make people aware of. Now, Jackie, I want to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I'm an optimist. I own a positive talk radio network. Some people say I'm naive. I've been naive all my life. I want to give people the benefit of the doubt that they don't really understand the impact of leaving a headline of the George Floyd trial on a coworker's desk with no note. I want to give them the benefit of doubt that they don't really understand what the impact of that is.
It's so sad.
That's a real thing I talked about. That's real. I didn't make that up. That's like something that actually happened to one of my clients. I want to ask you this last question. Where do you go from here? What's your vision? And congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Where do you go from here? Help us. Help us go from where we are now to where we need to get. And how do we get a copy of the book?
So, you know, there's something that my hope and that my daughter's hope is in writing this book. You know, we suffered a lot of racial trauma, Dr. Pat.
Mm.
I'll be honest with you. I am still trying to recover from my own trauma. When you go through diversity trainings in your organizations, they don't teach you about the human aspect of racism. You know, they focus on what's occurring in the company. They come up with these scenarios in their trainings, and they only focus on a very small snippet of what happens to an employee who is experiencing racism while they're at work. They never touch base on the full picture, how racism affects that person not only while they're at work, but when they leave work. And there is a lot of racial trauma that occurs on an emotional, a psychological, and a physical level.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like in Ebony's case, for example, the trauma that she experienced was so severe, she wanted to kill herself.
Yeah.
She went from wanting to kill herself to plotting how she could kill her boss. And that's a very real impact of racial trauma that a lot of people experience. But there's so much more. And so my hope is that people will read Hush Money and they will step into the shoes of a racial discrimination victim to see and feel the full impact of racism in a real and modern way, because this is occurring and hurting our people right now. And, you know, it's heartbreaking. And for me, you know, the last time my career was derailed, you know, I sink so low, Dr. Pat.
Mm.
I am still trying to recover.
Yeah.
But I found myself on the edge of the ocean at Salt Creek Beach contemplating just killing myself, because it's very difficult when you think that you live in a world where you are not accepted and where you cannot thrive and where you are treated as subhuman. And so I hope that people will read this, step into the shoes, and walk away with a deeper understanding of what life is like in the workplace for our Black and brown people, and hopefully take that knowledge and insight and work with us to create positive change.
You know, I am 100% with you on this and support you. It is very difficult to understand the everyday, relentless, 24 hours a day, every day of a person, a Black or brown person's life, every day, every minute of every day. It's walking on eggshells. It's never being enough. It's stepping out into the world and not knowing what might happen to you every day, 24/7. And to tell you, Jackie, this, your book opens up a door. But I hope that we recognize that the mental, psychological, and physical duress of this is decades and decades. And, you know, let me just say this other thing. I made a statement a couple of months ago, and boy, I'll tell you, people were just like, oh, you didn't really mean it. Here's what I said. We've got this new term called microaggressions, right? You know that term?
Yes.
It is such a misleading term. And I asked myself, why is anything of this nature led by the word micro? Now, people say, oh, but Pat, it's at the personal. I said, but wait a minute. Why don't we just call this what it is?
Exactly.
Why don't we stop with the fancy darn term and let's just say, oh, wait a minute, psychological abuse. Okay, that's more like it.
Because it's easier, Dr. Pat, to pretend that something does not exist than to acknowledge that it does. And so instead of just calling it what it is, we have to come up with ways to discount what people are experiencing.
So you're taking a giant step, a brilliant step, a courageous step. And there is much more for you to do on this. There's much more that people need to learn from you. And I want to congratulate you.
Well, thank you. And if I might just say, there is a part two to Ebony's story.
Mm-hmm.
It will be released on September 1st, because although she was able to prove systemic racism in her workplace and keep her job, her issues with racism in this company did not end there. And so book two, which comes out on September 1st, picks up literally where book one left off. And I also want to let your audience know that right now, Hush Money, How One Woman Proved Systemic Racism in Her Workplace and Kept Her Job, is on sale for $6. I mean, that's about what you pay nowadays for a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon for $6 in paperback and Kindle. It will be one of the best $6 you ever spend if you really want to get a deeper understanding of what life in the workplace is like for our people of color. And if you are someone like my sister who wants to have the book read to you, the audio book, also available on Amazon, is absolutely spectacular and does a wonderful job of bringing Ebony's story to life.
You know, you got to heal it. You got to hear it. You got to feel it. You got to be awake and aware enough to see it. And then you've got to be brave enough to do something about it. And I don't care what color your skin is.
That's right, Dr. Pat. And I'll tell you what keeps me going. You know, there are times as I'm writing these painful pages, you know, that it becomes overwhelming for me and for my daughters as well. You know, but my daughters look at me as the head. And so if I give up, then they will give up too. So what keeps me marching forward and continuing to tell our stories is the fact that I'm fighting racism in the workplace one book at a time, because not only do racist police kill us in our communities, as we saw with George Floyd and so many others, but racist managers and HR folks kill our careers in the workplace, and it really has to stop. It has to stop.
Yeah. Jackie, thank you so much for everything you're doing. I look forward to the second book. Thank you, and thank your family for an enormous step towards awareness, action, and freedom. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Have you ever felt like if you just had the right tools and resources, you'd be able to carve a path towards the life your heart is aching for? Guess what? You have everything you need inside you. I'm Natasha Ognedo, and I'm here to show you that your healing is in your hands. Tune into my show, Unlock the Healing Path, every second and fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To learn more about me and my work, visit NatashaOgnedo.com.
TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome to our good news segment. Money. Whether you've heard the word money from Pink Floyd or anybody else, money. What is it about money? When you say the word, some people just light up like a firefly, and other people, you would have thought that Darth Vader walked in the room. That's it. Is there any other topic, maybe a few, that polarizes us more than the money? The cha-ching. Well, Pathway to Prosperity by Mark Lazar is joining me here today. How do you take the mystery out of money? How do you look at this as its very nature, its origins, where it has come from, what it is we can all learn? And, you know, Mark and I share a lot of things. You know, blue-collar family, below the poverty line, first-hand struggles, you know, homelessness for me. I mean, what do we learn about money when you have a life like that? Or, better yet, what do you learn about what we can share with other people to help them? Pathway to Prosperity is the conversation we're having now. This is a body of work that Mark has stepped forward and said, let's talk this, let's look at it, and let's make sure everybody knows it's not for 1%. Mark, it's great to have you.
Thanks, Pat. Happy to be here.
So the conversation about money usually surrounds itself where we say, oh, that kind of money, that's for 1% of the population, as if we don't have choice and as if we don't have hope. So let's talk about how we rise up from, let's call it, economic disadvantaged family. What do we learn from that? But more importantly, how do we move from victim to victory around prosperity?
That is an excellent question, Pat. Is that like you? You know, I grew up in a blue collar home, wonderful parents. Dad worked in a gas station, mom worked in a coffee shop. Part-time, and then what little they had became even less when they became divorced, and I ended up living with my father, and I grew up in a one-bedroom studio, sleeping on a cot in a sleeping bag till I was about 16 years old, and I wouldn't change a thing if I could. It really taught me what was important in life, and it gave me, I think, a unique perspective and maybe a great work ethic that not all of my friends shared. So, you know, we live in a country where there is an unlimited amount of wealth. You had a great introduction, and you're right that money can be polarizing because people tend to think of it as that either you're born with it or you'll never have it. And that's not true in this country, and your story speaks to that as well, that in a free market system where there's an unlimited amount of wealth, and the only thing that limits wealth is a person's willingness to work, ingenuity, creativity, innovation, willingness to take risk, maybe some restraint or sacrifice, willingness to maybe go to school or get a credential or education that gives you a little bit better ability to earn money throughout your lifetime, and making sensible choices. And so, you know, what I discovered when I was young is that nobody talked to me about money. My parents certainly didn't understand it, and they never discussed it with me. I never had a single class in high school and, quite frankly, in college that said, explained how to balance a checkbook or manage cash flows or when to use credit and when not to use credit, and, you know, what are sensible investments, and what should we be doing with our excess cash flows, and how much is the right cash reserve to keep. It's just really basic things that everybody should know. And, you know, as I initially started off working as a bag boy in a grocery store at a very young age and became a store manager at a fairly early age as well, had not gone to college at that point. I had a Associate of Arts degree from local junior college. But I had at least a back-of-the-napkin understanding of how money worked. And it wasn't until I changed careers, and I was about 30 and went back to school and finished my undergrad and a master's degree in finance and began teaching at the university and was a financial advisor, that people would come to me on a regular basis and ask me, where do they go to get informed about money and understand how money works? And to be frank, I didn't have a good answer. That there are some books out there that I think that are helpful, but they really don't explain, they may explain conceptually, but they don't explain the application. In other words, what is that we should be doing on a day-to-day basis? So, you know, going back to your question earlier, is that it's about empowerment. And so I wrote Pathway to Prosperity to empower people, to teach them not just the concepts of how money works, but how to apply it to your day-to-day life. And being financially successful is really, quite frankly, about doing a dozen things maybe just a little bit better.
And, you know, I got to tell you, I have so many takeaways from your book. I want to just hit on a bunch of them, too, because, first of all, Pathway to Prosperity is to me, it has so many very important things people can actually do / change right out of the gate. That's what I love. It's a conversation that goes beyond the psychological or mental gyrations we go through about money. So, number one. Number two, there's a line in here that I love, and this is probably one of the most important messages for the newer generation that's out there now. And it's the conversation you have about credit. And I love the way you've outlined this, the pros and the cons and the credit score thing. And, you know, one of the things you say is credit, if properly used, is your friend. The goal is to maximize wealth, not to have the highest credit score. And sometimes those two goals are mutually exclusive. And you go on to tell people why. That if you have a score of 720 and a 720, what would be the goal of getting 800? And so what you're sharing here is a roadmap, as you said, a pathway. Because if our time and energy is focused in one direction to the point where it takes us away from wealth accumulation or wealth maximization, then aren't we just, man, spinning our wheels and we don't even know it? You know what? I had a mentor once that said, Pat, you're the best runner I know. I've never seen anybody run in place faster than you. That's what we don't want to do with money, right?
You know, that's really well said, and you hit on a very important point in the book. And it's about, the book is a series of very short chapters, typically 2 to 3 pages, but one of them is about doing good versus feeling good. And there are activities that we oftentimes do that make us feel good, but they don't do good. And so the book is really focused on being practical and efficient. You know, our most limited resource and most valuable resource is our time. And how do we spend that time in the most efficient, practical manner? And so to your previous point about credit score, you know, it may feel good to say that you have a credit score in the upper 700s. but it's not accretive to your wealth or your cash flows. That credit's important, you know, when you're borrowing money. And that's really it. And so when you're younger, it's important to get a credit score so that you're not being charged a higher rate of interest. And if you want to purchase a home, that you can purchase right. that home and so forth. But again, the real focus should be on activities that will improve cash flows, improve your balance sheet, and put you in a better position so that you're debt-free and that eventually that you can retire and ride off into the sunset, enjoy that lifestyle that you've always envisioned.
You know, this is really a conversation about choice. And you come out of the gate and you say that. I can't remember if it's a Tony Robbins quote that you have in a book, but it's about choice. I want to ask you this question because when it comes to money or wealth, there is quite a few people that don't believe that they have a choice. And, I mean, your book is filled with options. And what I mean by that is, Mark, when I have a book that I read that's filled with options, it screams choice. Tell us about how you drive that point home.
You made a great observation. And one of the first lines in the book, which is probably not politically correct in today's environment, is that I believe poverty is a choice.
Mm.
And granted, there are people that you're absolutely right. You mentioned this earlier that they weren't born with a silver spoon. They don't have wealthy parents, or they're never going to be born to money. They might start out further behind than others financially, economically, socially, and you know it's going to take more work and effort to catch up and do well and exceed. When you start out further behind. There's no question about that, but your point is absolutely salient and very relevant to the book, is that you do have a choice, and you can control your actions and behaviors and your lifestyle, and that's really what the book is about, is it teaching people how to maybe change those behaviors and lifestyles just a little bit. And those small changes today have a massive outcome in the future, especially due to the compounding of money. And so you're absolutely right, is that the book is about making choices and making, ideally, empowering readers so that they understand money and how money works and making better choices in their day-to-day life, and small choices, you know, whether it's you know, stopping off at the local coffee shop and getting that latte, or whether it's going to the dry cleaners versus staying home and maybe ironing your shirts, or brown bagging your lunch versus going out to lunch every single day, or maybe buying a gently used car instead of getting that really fancy, shiny new car that would feel really good. That's really what it's about. And so everybody, and I believe this, that everybody can do better. Not everyone is going to be wealthy per se, but everybody can be in better financial shape. Everybody can be debt-free eventually. Everybody can have a cash reserve. Everybody can be funding their retirement accounts. And certainly this is going to be easier for somebody who, say, is in their 20s or 30s or early 40s. You know, if you're my age, for example, or older, I'm 60, you know, that you don't have quite as much runway, so that you won't have quite the same level of opportunity. But even somebody that's my age or older can still make changes today that are going to have make a massive difference in their life 5 years from now and 10 years from now.
You know, to your point, something is better than nothing. And that's why I look at this and I say money is for everybody at every age. You're absolutely right. I mean, if you're in a position, especially if you are a generation we're talking about that went through, you know, 2007, 8, 9, and 10, you already know what that experience was like. But it doesn't mean you can't restart. It doesn't mean you can't change your view of money. I want to ask you this question, and it's more esoteric, and I know you've got to run. When I look at Pathway to Prosperity, it is a guidebook. There's so much in here, Mark, I mean, that I could talk about. But there's something in here that I want to bring to the forefront. Aren't you also asking us to change our mindset?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's to look at money differently, and that what's the old saying, money is the root of all evil, I couldn't disagree more, is that money to me, Pat, doesn't mean having the biggest home or the shiniest car or designer label clothing. Money is about peace of mind. Money is about not having to worry when you get that unexpected bill or expense. That, and I don't know about you, but that happens to me every month. That every month I have a budget, I know what my cash flows are supposed to be, and they never end up what I had planned. And having that cash reserve takes away the worry. It takes away the concern. I haven't worried about money in many years. And again, this is from growing up poor, because I learned early on that I needed to keep a cash reserve, and I learned that by making mistakes, by, you know, running out of money and having to use credit or getting an extra credit card and having to charge that credit card, and you know, I'm sure that you remember as well that in the early 80s, you know, interest rates were significantly higher than they are today, and I think my credit card bill was something around 24% interest. It was miserable trying to get that paid off. But when I got it paid off, and again, this was a valuable learning lesson for me. I learned that early on, and I learned that, you know what, I never want to pay interest again. And I had, once I paid my credit card off and I kept the cash reserve, I never had to worry about it again. I never had to worry at the end of each month if I was going to have enough money to pay my bills and to pay my rent and so forth. And so you're absolutely right. This book is about making better choices today, not necessarily so that you can become a millionaire tomorrow. I do believe that will happen for most, that for somebody who starts this in their 20s or 30s, that just due to the miracle of compound interest, if you're just funding your 401k and perhaps putting money in a Roth IRA, and you keep debt-free and you keep a little cash reserve, I can all but guarantee you at some point when you're my age that your net worth will be well over $1 million and perhaps much more than that. But the book isn't so much about being rich. It's about being comfortable. It's about having peace of mind that comes with knowing that your finances are in good order.
I can't thank you enough for bringing the conversation to the forefront. And as a matter of fact, you know, this is a conversation for all time. But right now, today, it is a conversation for people to understand their wealth potential. And thank you for giving us very clear tools, very clear guides, and making this available for everyone. Whether we're looking at exchanges or taxes or monthly sheets, budget sheets or cash flow, I think you put it all. But then again, you are an incredible financial expert and financial planner. Thank you so much. Mark, how do we get a copy of the book? How do we find out more about you? And I'd love to know your personal message.
You know, you can find the book on Amazon. It's Pathway to Prosperity. You can also go to the website, which is pathwaytoprosperity.com, and you can read about my bio. And again, my message is, you know, I think that my message and yours are perfectly aligned, and that, you know, this is about making good choices, right? In other words, empowering people to make decisions that you know, when I made the comment earlier that poverty is a choice, that if you don't believe that, then that means you're powerless to affect change. And so what I really want people to understand is that they're in charge, that they hold the reins, and making good decisions today will have an enormous impact on their life for the better tomorrow. And I think that to me is just, it's empowering. I think that it should lift people and elevate people, that they're in control, that they're in charge.
There's nothing more freeing than knowing you have the freedom to choose. But there's even nothing more freeing than that, to know that you have the freedom to choose your wealth destiny. Mark, thank you so much for everything you're doing.
Thanks, Pat. It's been a pleasure.
All right, everybody, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Tuesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for Around the Sun. We're still, unfortunately, on 405 northbound just after the 167 interchange, Talbot Road South exit, and, of course, the 169 area there. It is heavy up through the Kennedale Hill. It will break free, though. Good thing, though, after, looks like Northeast 30th Street. So it's actually getting a little bit better than earlier this morning's traffic. Other than that, stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, it's Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge, Radical Change with Eve, and On the Edge of the Big Y. Stay tuned. NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. The Texas House will be sending law enforcement after the Democrats who broke quorum to protest an election bill. State representatives voted this morning in favor of the plan, which involves having a sergeant at arms try to get all the missing members back, even if it's through arrest warrant. The death toll at the South Florida condo collapse is now at 95. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava says the medical examiner's office is a key player in the ongoing recovery mission. Surfside Mayor Charles Burkett says they're working to grant site access to expert engineers so they can investigate why the building collapsed. Pfizer is pushing to get authorization for a COVID-19 booster shot, saying it sees signs that vaccine immunity wears off over time. But as Sarah Lee Kessler reports, federal health officials won't make a decision right away.
Officials from the New York-based pharmaceutical giant met with the FDA, CDC, and top health officials Monday, including Dr. Anthony Fauci. Fauci told CNBC it was mostly a courtesy meeting and said the discussion about booster shots had nothing to do with the vaccine's effectiveness. He emphasized that more than 99% of people who die from COVID-19 are unvaccinated.
The 2021 Emmy nominations are out. Actress Jasmine Cephas-Jones announced the nominees for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Comedy Series.
Anthony Anderson, Blackish. Michael Douglas, The Kominsky Method. William H. Macy, Shameless. Jason Sudeikis, Ted Lasso. Kenan Thompson, Kenan.
The ceremony will be held September 19th at the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles. One of the most successful tennis players of all time won't compete in the upcoming Olympic Games. Roger Federer announced on Twitter he's withdrawing from the Games to begin later this month. He blamed a setback with his knee following two surgeries on his right knee. The Swiss superstar said the issue happened during the recent grass court season. He played at the just-completed Wimbledon tournament but lost in the men's quarters. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Research shows that people remember radio ads with repetition. So to help you remember that Liberty Mutual Insurance Company customizes your home insurance so you only pay for what you need, here's a repetitive ad. Okay. Research shows that people remember radio ads with repetition. So to help you remember that Liberty Mutual Insurance Company customizes your home insurance so you only pay for what you need, here's a repetitive ad. Only pay for what you need at libertymutual.com.
Liberty. Napa know-how.
Get 20% off three or more items with a $2.99 Napa bucket. Yep, save on wipers, headlights, brake pads, motor oil. Wait, how long is this list? Wow, floor mats, boat batteries, towing parts. I'm not sure we have time to read all this. Let's just say save 20% on a lot. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Take a location. This food is applied. They not be combined with other offers. Offer at 731-21.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for Alternative Talk weather outlook for Tuesday. Well, we'll see more sunshine ahead of us today. High temperatures around 81, 82 degrees. Tonight, mostly clear skies, lows back down to about 58, 57. For Wednesday, more sunshine yet again. A little cooler, though, around 77. Increasing clouds Wednesday night. Nothing too major. Lows down to about 56. Thursday, running up into the weekend, partly to mostly cloudy skies. High temperatures backing off a little bit in the low 70s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready to challenge conventional beliefs about what's possible in creating health, wealth, and happiness. You are listening to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge. This hit show is providing you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. It is time to open and expand your awareness, accelerate your well-being as Megan shares wisdom, teachings, and experience from a lifelong journey of the heart. Enact the power of radical change with ease and lift your desires to a new perspective. Now, here's Playing on the Edge Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Playing on the Edge Radio, Radical Change with Ease. I'm really looking forward to our radio show today, Pat, because we're going to be asking one of my most favorite questions, my biggest question ever. I love the question, why? And the reason that I love the question, why, is because it leads to curiosity. And curiosity is, I think, one of the most important and amazing aspects of humanity. I think it's something that separates us from many other species on the planet in that we can get curious and that curiosity will take us places. And that's part of what we're going to be talking about today. So I'm really excited for us to have our show today.
Yeah, and I think part of this too is to really peel back the many layers of why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the why you just described, which is the why of curiosity. You know, I mean, you've raised a few children, and there's that says that, that childlike curiosity, why is the sky blue, right?
Yes.
And so we're going to talk about not only the curiosity and intuitive nature of that three-letter word, conversation about why that isn't about curiosity. And more importantly, the bigger conversation about what is my why? What is my why? And I had an experience this morning that I didn't really even think would feed into our show today, which is kind of interesting. But, you know, Megan, let's talk about this from your perspective, because you and I have talked about a lot of things over the past, let's just say 18 months, just to coin a phrase.
Just to coin a phrase, yes.
Just to coin a phrase. And, you know, why is that thing that has come up for so many people? So let me ask you, what is it about that word that you got introduced to? When did you get introduced to it? And how did it become sort of the cornerstone of your curiosity evolution?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this since we decided this was going to be our subject this month. It definitely goes as far back as my early childhood. I had very inquisitive parents. They wanted me to be inquisitive. They took me out into the natural world on a regular basis with explanations of why we were out there and what we were doing there. I learned at a very early age what something was and why I could eat it or why I couldn't eat it from the forest or from the beach. And my father being a journalist and a publisher of newspapers, my mother being very, very curious and very bright, there was constant conversation. So the question of why was something that we discussed all the time, regardless of what it was, whether it was something we'd seen on the news that evening or that day or something that had happened at school or just, it was just always, we were always curious. We were a very curious family. Then the other level of it for me is when I look at the work that I do with my clients and with my students, helping people to find their own empowerment around their healing and their wounding so they can live their best lives, the place that we start with is that first question of why. You know, why would I want to change? Why do I feel the way I feel? Why am I not happy? Why does this hurt? When we start with that question, that fundamental starting point, it's from there that we can open up our minds to the information that's waiting for.
I think there is a trilogy, the most empowering. Once upon a time, who knows when? Who knows what workshop? If you have a 25-year corporate career and then you become a corporate consultant for 10, who knows where you make this stuff up? Well, one of the things I had scribbled on a piece of paper a long time ago, and I don't know if I was mocking the training or, but I love Venn diagrams, Megan. I love them. I don't know why I love them. I love them because they always look like they have three parts. A Venn always looks like it has three, but it never does. You see, because the minute that you put three circles on a piece of paper and make them concentric, make them equally overlapping, I don't care how equally you do them, there's always one thing in common. There's always a center point where each of them beautifully, beautifully, equally exists. And I remember this conversation once, and it was about why. And I remember one of my mentors saying to me, no way are you going to use why without two other words. And I said, like, what two other words? Why is like the biggest word on the planet. There's no bigger word than why.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you could stay in your why, but without the what and the when, you will stay in a place of exploration and cease to exist. Now, that is some strong mental language. This is the same mentor that said to me one day, I shared this on the, said, oh, my God, Pat, you are the fastest runner I've ever met. Now, I have to tell you, I am not a fast runner. This had to be a joke. Everybody knows that I have to hit the softball really far. You know why? Because it takes me five times longer to get first base. But I'm close to the ground. That's why I make a great shortstop. She says, oh, my God, you're like the fastest runner in the world. My God, I've never seen anybody run faster than you. And I just looked at her, and she says, you know, you're the fastest runner I've ever seen run in place. Nobody else runs faster than you in place. Nobody. It took me 3 minutes to realize what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that part of what could be both the beauty, the benevolence, and the but of why?
Well, you're
like B-U-T-T or
B-U-T-T. Yes. Well, I look at why as a starting point. And one of the things that I've noticed over the last 18 months is that there are a lot of people who are not asking why.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who are saying, how high do you want me to jump? And not critically thinking. It feels to me like critical thinking has gone out the window since day one. And I find it, quite frankly, shocking when I look around me at people who I had assumed or thought I knew were critical thinkers before all this started happening 18 months ago, and who are not, at least not under these circumstances. And what I see happening is that fear shuts down critical thinking. And when you talk about, okay, there's the why, and then what about those other two words? There's actually five questions that are central to critical thinking, which is where, when, what, why, who.
Right. And how. Right.
And how, yeah. How, what, where, when, why. These questions are so, they're so elementary to the evolution of thought, to the ability to invent, to the ability to evolve, to really question the things that are happening around us. And not everybody is comfortable questioning the controlled narrative. Not everybody is questionable, is comfortable questioning the way that things are being done. And it's because of that discomfort in asking those questions that leadership is often able to be in a very control way when people don't ask questions. And so what I'm also seeing happening is that there's a discouragement to ask questions, right? There's not a lot of leadership right now that's encouraging the population to question the things that are happening around us right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge concern for me.
Yeah. I want to talk about this notion of why. And there are times for why.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times not for why.
Mm-hmm.
When you are seeing your child trapped in a car, and that's not the time to ask why. Your child is trapped behind the wheel of a car, and the only thing you could think of is, I need to get her out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is really the difficulty for people. We're all different. We all function differently. You know, I can contemplate my navel for days on end and not realize I haven't eaten.
Mm-hmm.
and I've had to learn a couple of things. There's some things I've had to learn. Mm-hmm. And I remember that when we enter the realm of situations that are personally complex to us,
mm-hmm.
and we don't question, or we don't stop, or we don't dot, it could become a problem. And you know what I think about? I think about these times in history, and we'll talk about this,
mm-hmm.
when rubber stamping bad behavior got so far out of realm that half of the planet was convinced that it was the right thing to do. And we can point to times in history over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and I have been on the side of raising awareness about why. Mm-hmm. And today's show is to really bring the sexy back to why, isn't it?
I love that. Let's make why sexy again. Let's make critical thinking sexy again.
That could be a stretch.
Well, it is something that I think is taught, being able to think critically, to ask intelligent questions, not just to blindly dismiss everything from the place of why, but to really think with discernment what needs to be questioned. I think that that's something that we learn as really young children, and we learn that when we start asking why, which most children do as soon as they can talk, if not even sooner than that, by pointing at things, because we're innately curious. And little children are trying to understand their surroundings, and so they do that by questioning everything.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
How is that received in the family of origin? You know, if the parent has the patience to answer the question why with an explanation, or, well, what do you think, or why do you think it happens, you know, to engage the child, then that child is going to grow up to be an adult.
Yeah.
Is constantly thinking critically.
Yeah, and here's something we do learn as children. Let's start this out here before we go to break. We learn something interesting as children. You know, we learn that sometimes we ask a why and we really want an answer.
Mm-hmm.
But we also learn something else in asking why. What we learn as kids in asking why is that we really don't want to know why you don't want me to have that cookie. We really don't want me to know why. But if I keep whying you to death, I've learned a trick. A, I'm going to get the cookie. And B, now I've learned a really cool tool to figure out how to get stuff I want. And we've seen both of those versions in the past 18 months. We've seen both of those versions used.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen one of them used to manipulate and manage people and, you know, convince people of things that they wouldn't ordinarily even contemplate.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that in the why.
Definitely.
And yet, the most graphic commercials about don't smoke can't get people not to smoke. Let me come back. I mean, you've seen them. I've seen them.
Oh, yeah.
What about encouraging curiosity?
Mm-hmm.
Where is it appropriate? How do you learn the art of it? And when the building is burning down around you, may not be the time to ask who started the fire.
Right.
And why? Let's take a short break when we come back. Encouraging curiosity. How do you start? Where do you begin? And is it the next pillar of leadership? Megan Edge is going to be taking us on that journey. We'll be right back.
Ascending with the Arcturians with Vivian Chouvette. Tune in to Transformation Talk Radio every second and fourth Fridays at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We are shifting from the third dimensional plane of reality to higher octaves of life. Let us reclaim our sovereignty as a united family of life and manifest the planetary ascension. Our return to Prime Creator. For information on our services and to connect with Vivian, visit infinitehealingfromthestars.com.
Can't get enough of I Soul Radio? Join Psychic Medium Jamie every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Take a deeper look at the raw side of spirit. Nothing is off-limits. Connect with lost loved ones and explore these vulnerable subjects with the compassionate guidance of Psychic Medium Jamie. You are not alone. Eye of Soul, Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
We're back in that jazz music, aren't we? I don't know. What happened to the rap music, Benny?
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Thank you, Dad. I like it.
You're welcome.
I'm going to leave that in my car. Boy, I got to have me some fake something now. I'm telling you.
Get in the groove with Dr. Pat and her guests on Transformation Talk Radio. It's always something new around here. Visit thedrpatshow.com.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
You're driven, and it totally shows. Your career is taking off. You're killing it in the mom game. But did your health needs make it on the plate this week? Tune in to the Boss Up Babe radio show, where Carissa Adkins helps babes show up, boss up, and thrive. Every second and fourth Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Become the boss babe you were meant to be. To sign up for one of Carissa's group coaching programs, visit 365dailyhustle.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. A very, very important show for both Megan Edge and me, Dr. Pat. Look, this is Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge, Radical Change with Ease. Today, Megan is taking on the topic of On the Edge of the Big Why, A Case for Curiosity. Before we kind of roll, Megan, a couple things. You know, I know that you have done so much work, whether it's master healer, teacher, radio host, speaker, writer, author of The Heart's Journey. You know, there are a lot of things now that I'm sure you're looking at and opening up and saying, wow, we've got a big job to do. What are the many ways people can find out about you and work with you?
There's lots of different places online where people can find me. They can certainly visit me at my website, which is meganedge.ca, and there's lots of things, lots of resources on the website, lots of ways to work with me, whether it's in person these days now, thank goodness, or online. I'm happy to do either. You can also find me on our YouTube channel at Megan Edge Healing. We've got hundreds, literally hundreds of videos, including all of our radio shows. So lots of resources to see who I am and how I do the work that I do. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. I think I have a Twitter account. So I'm all over the place. You can just, if you look up Megan Edge Healing, that's where you're going to find me.
Let's talk about this curiosity of why. And there truly is a curiosity. I mean, there's so many different versions of this we could talk about. Mm-hmm. I just left a fabulous session today. Took a little bit longer than I thought. And I don't know why it is. I don't know why the revelations come at the minute when you're working with energy work, right?
Yep,
but
they do, don't they? They do. That's right. That's why my sessions are 90 minutes now instead of an hour. So we've got that half hour to work with what we dug up at the 60-minute mark.
You know, the question of why came up, and I want to talk about this, and please, if you could take the lead on encouraging curiosity. Mm-hmm. I made a statement. I think there are times where encouraging curiosity is absolutely essential, mm-hmm. and there are times that it's not. And these are two things that really get confusing for people. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the first, the one where we need to bring the sexy back to critical thinking. I mean, I said was sexy.
Without critical thinking and without curiosity, we would not have evolved as a species. We would still be picking fleas off each other, sitting around the savanna at the edge of the forest. Honestly, if we hadn't somehow in our brains evolved an area that is that critical thinking area, that is that curiosity area, that the why is this happening, the how is this happening, or the how can I do this once I understand the question of the why. Every major advancement in human history, in human evolution, every invention that's ever been created came from a place of curiosity and imagination. It came from somebody saying, huh, why am I doing it like this? Could I do it better? Is there a different way of doing it? That kind of questioning is what creates leaps and bounds of evolution for us. Mm-hmm. And we can look back historically and we can see those places where suddenly tool making went from a stick being poked into an anthill and the ant sticking to it and licking the stick to creating a shovel. And we can watch how our civilizations advanced through stages of curiosity. And then we can also see where there's been stagnation. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. You could spend 100,000 years just with one shovel. But at a certain point, somebody's brain is going to work a little bit differently, and it's going to start asking that question, why? And as our culture and as our civilizations accelerate, and right now we're in this huge acceleration, that critical thinking is so important. Otherwise, we lose our freedoms. If we simply say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, and don't ask any questions about it, we are going to lose our freedom. We are losing our freedoms right now on account of that.
Yeah. So can we talk girl to girl?
We can talk.
I got to tell you what I'm a little old school about.
Mm-hmm.
I have a why.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to just love this. But you have kids.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And myself and Linda, they say we're old school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's why they say we're old school. Because somebody said this to us a couple of days ago, and we said, why? I mean, why do you think honestly, my brain created the technology of PTR.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that old school? So here's what they were saying. And I got my answer, and I really want you to help with this, because this is at the core of why we need critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So if Linda and I react to, like, so I changed the question.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, why do you think, I mean, that's like New York and New Jersey. What? I said, what is it about us that makes you say that? And the answer was interesting. We just want to email you. And we're like, well, we just want to talk with you.
Mm.
And I looked at a series of emails this morning from my team. New team, fabulous jumping in, great communication. I realized something.
Mm-hmm.
There's an answer to Linda and mine's why. We get 100 emails an hour on a good day.
Yeah.
So having 3 or 4 emails go back and forth, answering a question about why Facebook didn't post a show, it makes me want to really just rip my eyeballs out. When honestly, if you pick up the phone and call the host and say, this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it got resolved.
Okay.
So I have to change my view of my why to say, if my why is because I have a perspective that I don't want to be open to another point of view, that is not curiosity.
Mm.
So let's talk about critical thinking and curiosity, because in 18 months, we've gotten both. There's a genuine curiosity, a genuine one, that we need to remember, because we have to figure this out now.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are not talking about this because we don't have anything better to do.
No, we're talking about this because it's really important.
It's important.
It's very important.
We've never been here.
Well, no, not in this global kind of a way. We have not been here in this global kind of a way. And asking questions that you don't want the answer to is a really great motivator for not asking questions. So this is the part of the discernment. You know, ask a question that you're willing to hear the answer to, even if the answer is not something that you want to hear. And then be willing to do something with that answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the how that could follow the why. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The how is the action question. The why is the seeking question. That's the curiosity question. But then the how becomes, okay, well, how do we change this? Or how do we do this differently? How do I change my life? How do I make it? You know, all that kind of stuff. The other thing that's really important to remember, too, and this comes back to the child's locked in the car or the building is burning. Sometimes it's not safe to ask why. why are you treating me like this, might not be a safe question to ask if the result is going to be a smack in the face. If the person you're asking the question to doesn't want to answer it. And for me, this comes back to one of my big whys, which is, why are we not allowed to ask questions about the science? Why are we not allowed to talk about alternative health measures or,
right,
or healing protocols?
Right.
Why? What's,
right,
what are they afraid of?
Right.
We can't have discourse on this.
Yeah.
Right? I know the answer, at least I believe I do, and I'm not the only one who has the idea of what the answer actually is to that. But then that takes me to the next question, which is, well, why do you need so much power? Why do you need so much control? Why is that behind all? Like, right? That's where my genuine curiosity comes from. And it's not necessarily a critical thinking stance. It's a curiosity stance. Because as you point out, they're different. They blend, but curiosity is about, I'm just really curious.
Yeah.
Critical thinking is, okay, now I need to know.
Yeah.
At least the way that I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what we're learning about is we're learning about information control by private companies.
Mm-hmm.
We're also learning about information control by not private companies, but are funded by private companies and or government, better known as nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're really looking at companies that are private companies, but stock-owned companies, where they have to be worried about it. And then there's us. And this is an interesting question, because why comes up around our infrastructure. And as we get ready to grow and expand, and you talk to different people about your financial model or your corporate model or what you are, there's always the ideal or optimum infrastructure for you. There's the one that says, well, if you go public, dot, 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 dot. So, you know, as I looked at these, I really had to ask, well, what is my why?
Mm-hmm.
What is my why around the Transformation Network? Is my why to be fully funded stock-owned company, or is it been like it was from 18 years ago? And that is to provide a forum for honest, open communications about what is on people's minds and in their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
See, now, the minute I distribute to a private company, then I've got to follow their why.
Yeah.
But see, we're independent.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't have to do that. But this is really where we have to think about what is our own why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, am I going to not be allowed, Megan,
mm-hmm,
when we start Lyme Talk Radio again and we start to talk about, hello, folks, the largest epidemic that we've ever had, 350,000 cases a year, cumulative every year, and no cure.
Mm-hmm.
And no vaccine,
mm-hmm,
or no recognition of it, what's going to happen if I bring a naturopath on?
Yeah.
What's going to happen?
Yeah. What is going to happen? Will they be allowed?
The question is, why is it going to happen, Megan?
Yes.
Why? Let's skip the break, because I want to really dig into this.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard a lot of things in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've said a lot of things in my life. I had a lot of training. Corporate executive, CEO. Damn, I've even been in a video with John Legend.
Well done.
Jessica got a bigger part than me, but I got over it. But I'm starting to really look at what you all want, you all want, and our audience wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to tell, two things happened today. I had to go back to two of my financial people and say, I'm not doing that. And they said, well, you better have another thing. And I said, we're going to do crowdfunding. we're going to declare ourselves an independent network. We're going to make a commitment to stay that way. We're going to talk about the technology we're developing, and we're going to ask people to contribute to that value system.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, nobody will ever donate. And I said, why do you think that?
Why not?
But do you see, we're being faced with, and can you talk to this from your perspective?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't feel good to lose our freedom of speech. Please.
No.
Why aren't more people asking why?
I believe a lot of people are asking why. I believe that there are millions and millions of people across the planet right now that are asking the big why. And they have a voice. They've had to take their voice off mainstream media. They've had to go to alternative or off mainstream media in order to find a platform where they're not going to be taken down the moment they open their mouth and say something contrary to what is the mainstream narrative. We've seen it happen over and over and over again. And you and I did a whole, we've done a number of shows now on the edge of losing our voice, on the edge of mass manipulation, you know, on the edge of the new abnormal, questioning and looking at what is exactly happening here, where we have grown up with an assumption that we have a freedom of speech as an innate human right. And yet it's actually not an innate human right. There are lots of countries where it is not, and there is no voice, except for those few brave people who are willing to stand up with a voice and question critically those questions that we ask, the who, what, where, when, why, and how. Those are the people who are able to make a difference in a way that is, I believe, absolutely fundamental to whatever the next stage is for our species globally, for each country, for each community, for each family, and for each individual. Even in the most totalitarian regime, there is always someone who is willing to take the risk to stand up and say something and gather to themselves and around themselves other people who are encouraged by their actions to do the same thing. And that's what changes history. Right? It's that ability to say, wait a minute, this doesn't feel right. This is not okay. And we need to do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm this as somebody that is a service provider, and so are you, Megan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are service providers. I've said this, we have the best viewing and listening audience on the planet. There's none better. They have told me at various points in 18 years when they loved what I was doing, and they've said to me at times, oopsie, we don't really want you doing that, right? And I've had to take my show, a different form of my show, elsewhere. But this is really about the creative aspect of why, but the empowering aspect of why.
Yes, absolutely.
When you are faced, this is my question to you.
Mm-hmm.
This is the child question, but mm-hmm. this is the way we're being responded to
mm-hmm.
as adults now. But it's a child thing. When a child gets you to the point of 100 different whys about the cookie, and you realize you've tried to rationalize with somebody that just wants something, you go to the old standby, because. And that's what we've been getting, because. See, there's no other rational, la, 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 la. It's you, no, don't ask why about that, Megan. Pat, don't mm-hmm. you ask why about that. Don't ask why about that. Look at because. And if you don't do the because, you can't participate.
Yeah, so what we're hearing from the mainstream is because I said so. And
that's
a huge
cause, though, right?
Because I said so. That's a huge trigger. If you as a child had a parent or other adults in your life who never answered your question but instead shut you down with because I said so, after a while, you're going to stop questioning. You're going to stop asking questions. It's not going to feel safe to do it. And you're not going to learn how to ask questions in a critical kind of a way. What I'm seeing around the world and what I'm seeing just even in my own communities is that many people are not satisfied with the because I told you so. And so they're looking for answers elsewhere because what they've learned is that leadership is unwilling to engage in conversation and is unwilling to allow any other rhetoric. And so communities are gathering online and offline to have the kinds of conversations that they can have when Big Brother's not controlling it, to be able to explore, you know, what is the science, what is the research, what is the interest, what is the information, what are other people's experiences of this? And I believe that the people who are willing to do that and have those kinds of conversations are probably the ones that were brought up in families where parents answered them or engaged them in conversation, you know. Or turn the question back to them. Well, what do you think? Why do you think this is happening this way?
May I get to the heart of what we're talking about by quoting from Johns Hopkins today?
Okay.
May I?
You may. You have permission.
I'm reading from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. For those of you that are listening, so this is not an opinion statement. But many weeks ago, Megan and I attempted to talk about the COVID-19 boosters. That show never really made it anywhere. We never did play it, but we asked a lot of questions about it. We asked the whys, the impacts, the uncertainties, the roles of vaccines. So please, if you are one of those private networks and you're wondering if I am talking about something that's medically written, it is. And I will give you the exact article which it's from. It is from Johns Hopkins, Bloomberg School of Public Health. It just came out this morning. And the question is COVID-19 boosters, what are they? Do we need them? And what the article says in a joint statement last night by the CDC and the FDA, in this language, it says they pumped the brakes on the notion that booster shots will be needed in the United States to protect fully vaccinated individuals of SARS-CoV-2. Now, why am I even saying that? Because several months ago, Megan and I, and Megan, myself, Dr. Ronnie, Dr. Darvish, I don't even want to mention names, we asked the why question. And you all never heard that show. It got pulled, along with a couple of our other hosts, and by the way, an entire network we're on. So this is an article that answers that question.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted a why. So perhaps our why was premature. I want to go to that for a minute.
Oh, interesting.
The premature why.
Mm-hmm.
The why that comes out of visionaries that truly explore. Like the why that Arnold Penzias had about the Big Bang, asking the why question. Ultimately, he did prove it. But if we can't ask the why question, what is the questions that we can ask, Megan? Help me.
I would love it if we could always ask the questions that made other people slightly uncomfortable. Because I love the idea of challenging someone's set belief if what I see them believing isn't good for them. And I say that from the perspective of a therapist and a counselor. You know, if one of my clients is sitting in my office and she's telling me a story that I know isn't good for her, my job is to challenge her on that story. My job is to say, are you sure that you're not good enough? Why are you saying that? You know, where is that coming from? How did you learn that? Is to challenge that. So when you ask the question, maybe we asked why at the wrong time. I don't think so. I think we asked why at perfectly the right time. I think the people on the other end of the question weren't ready or prepared to acknowledge that we could see through what was happening.
Yeah. You know, this is really tied into, and can we just jump to this part of the show where I want to talk with you about this notion of when it isn't safe to ask why.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave you an example. I mean, clearly if your child is in a burning car, to stop and ask why is the car burning and not pulling your child out, I'm not sure, but that doesn't make sense right there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that as a mother, you don't find out what happened to that car. I mean, honestly, we have more organizations built, created by moms
mm-hmm.
that came from Point of Crisis. But can we talk about the healthy version of why? Why is it healthy for us to even contemplating in our minds? Because if more people would have asked why, Hitler wouldn't have killed millions of Jews. I'm pretty sure of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure. But even so, what can we do to encourage people today to not give up their why? Even if your friends and family get afraid for you,
mm-hmm.
even if you have a network that might be censored, tell us about that.
So the question is, when is it not safe, and what do we do if it's not safe?
And, you know, how do we hold on to the courage
yeah.
to hold on to our why in the face of everybody telling us you can't ask your why?
Mm-hmm. One of the first things I think is really important is that you find like-minded people that you can surround yourself with who are also curious and are willing to ask the question, why, so that you're not alone. You know, it's when we were talking about mass manipulation in our last show, it is easy when you isolate people from one another to then be able to convince them of things that they're not going to necessarily question if they don't have anyone else around them to help them with that question. Right. So it's important to have people around you. I've created a number of small communities, 10 or 12 people, and we get together and we talk about all this stuff in a safe place where we can ask questions and we can share research and we can do things like that. So that's one of the things that I've done to help me feel that I can continue to ask my why and that it'll be okay to do that. And then, I mean, the truth of it is, if you want to go back to some place like Nazi Germany, at a certain point, it wasn't safe to ask why.
No, it was not.
Because if you ask why, what happened to my neighbor? Why did my neighbor get taken away? Then you're next. And so you learn to not ask questions in order to keep your family safe. And you do that for as long as you have to, until something changes, and something always does, that liberates your ability to ask why. So I want to be really clear that if you're in a situation where it's not okay to ask why, it's not safe,
right?
Then don't ask why just yet. But know that when you are then hopefully once again in a safe situation, the asking of the why is what's going to lead to the change that you are wanting. It's going to lead to the healing that you are needing. And you know, as a collective of these last 18 months and however long this is going to continue to go on for, there's a lot of healing that's required and that's going to be required as people start to step away from the fear and open up to the, wait a minute, you know, when I really think about it, why did it happen like that? And the why often leads to the rug being pulled out from underneath you. And that can be disconcerting. And so again, that's where it's so important to have support, have like-minded people, have community around you. And, you know, honestly, Pat, I would say that on either side of whatever divide has been created for us over the
years. Exactly.
It isn't just the critical thinkers who are questioning why from a place of this doesn't make sense to me. It's also for the people on the other side of that who have decided this does make perfect sense.
Exactly.
Right? And they're asking, why are you so upset about this? Why are you just doing it? Why are you just doing what you're told to do and make it easier for everybody else? That why is as important. It's equally important to any of the other whys that we're asking.
You know, I got asked the why question when back before vaccines, in the middle of this, I was asked the question, Pat, why are you adding an additional room on? We're in the middle of COVID. I mean, on the surface, when people see you do things like that, it just doesn't make sense. Why are you expanding your studio and office space? You know, that doesn't make sense. You know, COVID, and then they had a story. And I said, oh my gosh, my answer is easy. I have people that come in. I need to make it safe feeling for them to have enough distance between them and a place that they could eat lunch. I said, it has nothing to do with how I feel about the economy of COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, my why is people need to have a safe space. You know, you can't have a space where there's not enough room for people to sit and eat their lunch. And people are not able to go out like they did and go get a burger or go get this.
Mm-hmm.
And the person looked at me, Megan, and said, oh. And I thought, interesting how we live in our own world.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if we explain things a little differently, or maybe if we try to see both sides. But I want to ask you in this question moving forward, this is not only as humans our greatest gift and yet our greatest challenge. How do you see this unfolding for us in the forthcoming months? Where is Megan Edge's heart? How will you work with your clients?
Well, I hope that they'll come and see me in person, fundamentally and ultimately.
I
actually resist and dig my heels into the idea of putting everything online and doing everything at this distance, because for me that social is so important. You know, this is where we have dialogue. This is where we have breakthroughs. This is where we have aha moments. And quite frankly, as a counselor, if I can't see my client's entire body language, I can't really connect with them fully in that full energy of their being, of the nuances of their facial expressions and the nuances of their body. Because I read that. That's part of how I do my work. And that's at a personal level. You know, I want to be teaching my classes again in person. I love bringing people together and group energy and watching as we evolve in each other's energies and evolve through our own journey. That is not the same online. It's just not.
Yeah.
So I will fight tooth and nail to be able to do that. And to be honest, I have been doing it. Don't tell anyone all the way along. So I'm a little bit of a rebel. Safely. But, you know, again, just asking the why. Why can't I be outside on my deck with 10 people outside in the summer with the sun shining? Show me the science that says I can't do that. So I have been doing it. That's for me at the personal level. But when you ask the question, where do I see this going over the next few months?
People need help, Megan. That's my question.
Yeah,
you're probably like me. I get a call, minimally a call a day, a text a day. I work with women in recovery. I'm doing my best to be of service. The phone rings at 3 a.m. People need our help. And that's really, you know, for me, I don't even ask why about any of that anymore. I try to figure out what. Is there a new what? Is there a better how? And so I know that you're in the heart space to support your folks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you just said. There's a penny dropped there. Sometimes you don't ask why. Okay, so we already said you don't ask why if you have run into a burning building or a cat or whatever it is you're saving. You just do it, right? You ask why afterwards. And it's a similar thing. It's the I'm just doing it. This is what I have to do. I have to be of service. I need to be in the place of empowering, showing other people what's possible, empowering other people to see what's possible for themselves, to get them to ask the question why. I don't need to ask the question why am I doing this. That's a no-brainer for me. I do want to encourage other people to find a safe place to ask their why. You know, and we've talked about the big why. Why is all this happening? And honestly, I don't know. you are allowed to answer the question why, but I don't know. I don't have all the information to be able to make that educated guess. But at a very personal level, you know, it comes back down to, it's so important, what is your why? Why are you doing things the way you're doing things? Why are you accepting the things that you are accepting?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it okay? And why isn't it okay?
Yeah. I love this.
Sometimes we just leave it alone.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because it ties back in, and I want to really bring it back to this, because you said it before. We got to bring critical thinking back.
Mm-hmm.
We got to enable critical thinking, even if we don't do it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do it. But sometimes critical thinking needs to take a second step to leadership, to mentorship,
mm-hmm.
because, see, you hold a deck of cards mm-hmm. of wisdom around healing,
mm-hmm.
right? I hold a deck of cards around how to run a network, you know, what's important to train our new people about. This morning, I had a in-person session with Mary J. Mack. And the revelations from that changed the landscape of what I'm going to talk to the team about at 3 today.
Mm-hmm.
What do we want to leave people with, Megan? Because why and courage sometimes are inseparable.
Honestly, I think they're always inseparable, Pat. I think it takes an enormous amount of courage to ask why sometimes. I know for me personally, when I started asking why in my previous marriage, I had to look at things I wasn't willing to look at previously. I had to open my eyes. I had to take off the blinders and really get clear because I started asking why. Why am I allowing this? Why is this? Why have I let this be okay? Why is the other person behaving in this way? You know, I hadn't wanted to see that before. And so it does take an enormous amount of courage to ask why. And it can also lay you bare. It can take an enormous amount of vulnerability to ask why. So say to those who are listening as we close out today is, are there places in your life where you need to be asking why? And if so, maybe now is the time to do it. And if you can't do it by yourself, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, then reach out and help and have someone help you look at those questions, those whys, in order to be in a clearer space. So I think right now we all need to be in a clearer space than where we have been the last 18 months.
Well, Megan, thank you as always for, you know, bringing an enlivened conversation. And I love that you and I get to spend time talking about things that are really hard for people to talk about. But yet, we're really on the edge, no pun intended, really on the edge of greatness moment to moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, you said it best in one of the shows we've done. It's understanding what our why is,
mm-hmm.
but then having the courage to be the person we've always meant to be. The why, the who, the how, the what, all of that. But you also foster intuition in people. And I think that's a big part of your brilliance in what you do. Thank you for everything you do. Please tell folks how they can find out about you. Sign up, everything you're doing.
Well, thank you, Pat, first of all, for those beautiful words. Secondly, at the moment, I'm not offering any programs. I'm working on programs that are upcoming, including my new plant medicine and tree medicine programs. I'm very excited for those. And a whole new product line of salves and balms and tinctures and all these beautiful things that help support us and support our bodies as we move through the stresses of life. And for anyone who's interested in learning more about me and the work that I do, visit my website, meganedge.ca. It's under construction, but there's still lots of information there. See me on YouTube. Watch some of our workshops and our bits of wisdom and our shows and our podcasts and this show. And reach out to me on LinkedIn or Instagram or Facebook. I'm under Megan Edge Healing in all those places, and I would love to connect with you. Why? Why not?
Yeah. Oh, I like the other one. Because.
I said so.
Oh, my gosh. That my uncle was so great about the frustration of me, a very young child. Why? Very intuitive about him to teach me. And he was so patient. But when I asked the why question to change my great-great-grandmother's eggplant parmesan recipe, the answer came back in a lot of Italian language I cannot repeat on the show. Megan Edge, everybody, I'm Dr. Pat. We'll see you next time, folks.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, everyone. Take care.
You've
You've been listening to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and the Dr. Pat Show Network, providing you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. If you've missed any part of this episode or...